Good morning. 6:49, May 9th. Yes, I'm up early. I'm moving. It's cold out here. It's at least chilly. It's a beautiful morning, though. I wanted to get out and get the day going because I've been tripped up too many times by trying for that 7 to 8 o'clock time slot. Today, I'm pretty sure that I'm not going to get interrupted between 6 and 7 because it's a late start day for the elder daughter and a normal day for the younger. I should get home just about in enough time to wake everybody up and get them going, which means I get to do my walk without fear of interruption. And now watch, I'll get a phone call halfway through. But you know what? Some things can't be helped. So yesterday was actually a very productive day. It doesn't really, in a lot of ways, it doesn't seem like it because I'm not working on new stuff. I'm working on the captain's chair edits. And trying not to read the reviews and comments, it's like, come on, people. It's an interesting challenge of how to deal with this. And it's one of those things where you need to, as a creative, you have to understand that not everybody's going to like what you do. And there's going to be at least some portion of the audience that's going to say, oh, well, it would have been so much better if you'd just done this. When I was loading up the BlackBerry this morning, I reloaded the podcast and made the mistake of looking at the reviews for OwnerShare on iTunes. And there's so many people who really don't get the ending. There are times I wish I had ended it differently. And then when I think that, I think, you know, that's kind of numb. Because the story ended the way the story had to end. And the fact that some people don't like it, really, does that really matter? Is that relevant to the story that I wanted to tell? Is that relevant to the story that I want to tell yet? And so many people see this, the end of book 6, as the end of Ishmael Huang, even though it's far from the case, even though that ending, while on a minor chord, is not the ending of the song. It's a transition. And I think that was an important thing to say. That's an important idea that stuff happens. And it was one of the things that we talked about with Odin One Eye and I talked about yesterday, about how it was kind of senseless. It was kind of out of the blue. It was kind of shocking. And it was very shocking. It wasn't really out of the blue. At least I didn't think it was out of the blue. Now maybe to other people, the fact that we have this kind of Pollyanna beginning and a steadily darker progression through the last three books, I don't think it really caught. I don't think people really understood what it was that they were seeing. Now, to be truthful, I had no idea what OwnerShare was going to look like when I was writing Double. And for that matter, only some rudimentary ideas about it while I was writing Captains. So the fact that it went the way that it did, the fact that it has a plot that I think is an important one. And no, I'm not 100% sure people understand what the plot there is, what Ishmael's relationship with the universe is at that point. And he's a victim. He's always been a victim. I think it was Mainframe who pointed out that he was always reacting and never acting. And that's true. And I think that's, you know, when I look back in my first 30 years or so, I mean, there's a lot of what I see in my life, there's a lot of what I see in the lives of people around me, where for a lot of people, not everybody, because sometimes the tragic event comes early. But for some people, I mean, for a lot of people, they go through life fat, dumb, and happy until something happens. And they're forced to take stock. They're forced to recognize mortality. Gail Sheehy's book, Passages, is filled with people's stories about how on even-numbered decades, humans have a tendency to reevaluate their lives, to think about what it is that they have accomplished so far, and to try to project ahead to see what it is that they might want to do with what remains. I know I'm certainly going through one of those passages myself, counting down to 60 and looking ahead to, wow, I maybe have 20 years left. Maybe. Now, the maybe part has always been there. I mean, it's one of the realities, particularly of modern life, where we spend so much time in cars, we spend so much time out in public, we spend so much time interacting with a dangerous world. And while medical science has done wonders in terms of allowing us to survive some of the more violent and virulent episodes of modern life, you know, the reality is nobody gets out alive. Was it Thomas Wolfe who said that? So it's an interesting idea, and it was one that grew organically out of how that story went. I mean, that I may have done it poorly. Yeah, okay, I can accept that. There's no question I could have done it better. If there was a question, if I couldn't have done it better, then there's no sense for me to write another book. So yeah, there's definitely the reality there that I can do it better, and no, I'll add a different story next time. A better story. So anyway, yeah, I'm trying to get moving today. Get this day underway, off on a good foot. Off on the right foot. It's gorgeous out here. You know, I've forgotten. I walk at such odd times now. It's like catch as catch can. I had really forgotten how gorgeous these first few minutes of sunlight are. What a gorgeous morning it can be. My problem is, I've been reading Captain's Chair, and I want bacon and eggs, and home fries, fat, salt, cholesterol, and hair. I want those breakfasts. Somebody was critical of how much time I spend talking about food. And in part, I understand that for those people who haven't been there, they don't understand the importance of food. For people who have never been on a tin can, who've been never out on the ocean, never been cut off from the rest of the world, never been isolated with the same 30 or 40 people for weeks on end, they don't understand the importance of food. They don't understand the detail. They don't understand waking in the middle of the night longing for a fast food cheeseburger with salty fries slathered in ketchup. Now, for some people, that's not, you know, that's not what they wake up dreaming about. But the point still, I don't think I ever did either. For me, it was fish and chips. I never had fish and chips anyway. There's a good fish and chip shop in Maine. And they had good fried clams, too. But that was decades ago. I didn't even know if you can get good fried clams anymore. I couldn't think of the name of the place. It was down at Pine Point. It's gone. I can't remember. One of these days I'll have to go back and see if I can find some of these places that were part of my youth. I'm sure it won't look anything like what I remember. One thing I'd like to do is go back to Kodiak. And I'm not exactly sure why. Kodiak was one of those strange interludes in my life. I don't know if other people have them or have had them. But being in the Coast Guard, a lot of people now don't really understand the importance of military service when faced with rice paddies and people who want to kill you. Now, all of the Middle East vets probably understand that pretty well. But I don't think people really understand on a gut level the fear that most young men lived in 1970 to 72 in the United States. 1968 on, perhaps. It was always in the back of your mind. I mean, even after the Bay of Pigs, as terrifying as that was, we didn't really worry too much about nuclear war. But most of the people that I knew had serious concerns about Vietnam, about Cambodia. So getting into the Coast Guard for me was a way to avoid that. And as such, it had a certain level of unreality. It was always something that was going to be temporary. It was, I'll do my tour, I'll get out and get on with my life. So it was an opportunity for me to go away to explore not just the world, but who I was. And quite frankly, I was kind of a shit. I still am, probably. I'd like to think I was more aware than that. Which brings me to the comment about the perverse approach to sexual abuse. It was a review on Amazon. My first one star. And it's like, yeah, I get it. I get it. I understand. Hey, the problem that I have with that review is that the reader missed the point. The reader didn't quite grasp the reality that what we're talking about is a different set of morals, a different set of mores, that the ideas expressed in that book represent, in a certain sense, an extension of what we have now, but they aren't, and on purpose, they aren't directly translatable. The idea, and somebody later on, in the last day or so, left a review saying, you know, the idea that some of the people got away with it is, you know, troubling to folks. But I needed to say that, because the truth is, way too often, people get away with it. They get away with all kinds of stuff. They never get found. They never get punished. They get away with it. And really what matters isn't what they do or that they get away with it. In my mind, that story is, how do we react to it? How do we relate to it? The fact that Ishmael wouldn't listen to the secret tape that he inadvertently recorded, that he was able to not become like Burnside and Mosler and Aponis, that he was able to maintain his own integrity, even in the face of what was actually a confounding influence on his life. The interesting comment about Freddie adopting opponents was, it said a lot about Freddie, and actually said something about opponents that I think the critic really did miss. Or maybe it wasn't clear enough on the page. And maybe I'm not, maybe it's one of those things where it seems clear to me, but I wrote it, so I'm seeing things that aren't there. But the fact that Freddie was willing to take opponents on as a kind of factotum, as a kind of personal assistant, in spite of what he'd done, in spite of all he'd been through, in spite of all of the hate and discontent that they had, and we don't really know for sure, but had reportedly participated in, she was willing to take him and rehabilitate him to a certain degree. I mean, what's the choice? The choice is to put him on an airlock. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, what do we do with this person? What do we do with this individual who found himself in a place where what he did was not just accepted, but condoned and encouraged? What do we do with those people? What do we do with them when it's no longer condoned, let alone encouraged, where it's actually punishable? What do we do with them? Punish them? How? What do we lock them up? Throw away the key, take on their support for the rest of their lives, a lot like what we're doing in the United States. 1 person in 10 is in jail. 1/10 of the population is in prison in the United States. And we talk about human rights. Anyway, so it was a conscious decision on my part to create the kind of world where the automatic assumptions that we make about crime and punishment, about activities that are on the one hand reprehensible and on the other hand accepted within a particular context, how do we cope with those? How do we deal with them? How do we make this thing human? And what does that say about us now? That a lot of people really do get it, I think. I'm still running 10-1 again in favor of the book. In favor of how it's going, there's still a portion of the population, and that whether or not it's that they don't read it carefully enough, whether or not I didn't write it carefully enough, or whether or not they're the only ones who are actually reading it carefully, and everybody else is just saying, oh, it was wonderful, Nate wrote it. I don't know. Interesting questions. I'm not sure I have any answers, but it's one of those things that's ticking over in the back of my mind. It's probably going to inform what I write next. Just saying. Oh, look, I'm back. Here's the back gate. Tomorrow's another day. Perhaps I'll talk to you then.